Hey everybody, welcome to Hit Rewind. This is a catch-up episode from, 5 years ago? How long ago was this, John?
I don't remember, honestly. I think this is previous to me moving that we did all the Star Trek films, so yeah. This is like at least 2019 was the last time we did one of these.
Well, movies. I remember, because we talked about this with the last two episodes are, the last episode, this episode, the next episode are all catching up on franchises. For various reasons. Some have continued. Some we were waiting around for them to either finish up or we thought there'd be another part. Nope. We're still waiting for another Star Trek. So we're doing the... I don't think there's going to be another one in the Kelvin. Do you?
No. As much as I wouldn't mind seeing another film with these guys, we no longer have Anton Yelchin, and that really does kind of hurt. And they keep... You know, Quentin Tarantino keeps threatening us with a Star Trek film, and I'd rather not have one of his films.
Right, he's not going to direct it. He's got this fucking stupid 10-film rule, and he's chosen his last one to be The Critic or something like that, not based on the cartoon.
Actually, I would see that one, though.
Yeah, Jay Sherman's back. he was going to do a Star Trek movie, but I never actually thought he was ever going to direct it. I thought he was always just going to write it.
I'd always thought it was both. He was going to write and direct, but even then, I wouldn't want him writing a Star Trek film. I'm not overly precious about Star Trek before we continue on any of this stuff, but there definitely is... There are people who get Trek, and there are people who don't. Like, when it comes to writers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And we actually kind of see that in these films. Where the first film is the reboot, but I think it's where the second one where it kind of loses what it's doing.
Uh-huh.
Whereas you get the third film of this, I guess, trilogy now, that's definitely written by a fan and feels like Trek.
But then there was the one where they were trying to get a timeline going with a timeline event where Chris Hemsworth was coming back as his dad. And they were going to have adventures together, but then they wouldn't pay them enough money or something like that. I don't know. The budgets The budgets on these are insane already, and they're not bringing in the money they thought it would. So I'm not surprised they want to cut corners.
Yeah, and that was like what we kept hearing was going to be the fourth film, was that you'd get... Now that Chris Hemsworth is now star Chris Hemsworth, you have him going... Yeah, join Chris Pine and you do fun adventures or whatever. But I'm sure that could probably work, but that's not necessarily a story I would have wanted to see told.
Yeah, I keep thinking about it. Like, it undermines some of his drive if you bring him back, I guess. What I'm getting tired of, though, is multiverse, time travel to fix things, to bring people back. It's exhausting, and if they had done it when they announced it back in like 2018, it would have been fresher. But now, not so much.
Yeah, but that's actually kind of why I like what I like about this big screen reboot. You know, it's got 1,000% more lens flares, and they do a good job of basically saying, it's the whole you can have your cake and eat it too thing, because all the old Trek is not erased by this. It is still 100% canon.
Yeah.
It's just all of these films are also canon, but because it's a separate timeline. So we can have this whole, if you just want to have your adventures of old school Trek, all that's there and no one is touching your toys.
Right, right. It's not really a remake. It's not a reboot. It's just an alternate world version of it. How do you really... they're telling the origin story of them, which they've never really told. It's very interesting because it just goes off in a whole different direction.
Yeah, that's not true. And again, I really enjoyed how they get this group together, and I think the ensemble cast in this first film is really good. Everybody's fun. And... although I will say this, I don't like how they do the Kobayashi Maru. The way it kind of comes off in Star Trek II is that Kirk went and reprogrammed the simulator so he can win. But it kind of seemed like he played it the way Shatner makes it sound is that he plays it straight and he just somehow is able to win and no one knows what the hell he did. Whereas in this, Chris Pine is just kind of a cocky dickhead who, it's like, yeah, he got the thing rewritten, and it's just kind of a cocky dickhead throughout it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, as much as, yes, these are also different versions of these characters, they're not going to be the exact, you know, ones that we saw the original cast play. It always just kind of felt that in particular was off for that, for the purposes of storytelling.
And Beastie Boys are apparently the greatest band of all time and the only one that still exists. All three movies have the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, but you also have, you do have a Public Enemy track in the third one as well.
Did they? I don't remember. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's the first one they play, right?
Yeah. And that's, in as much, just, I guess, at least all three as a whole, I do kind of like the symmetry of having Sabotage at the beginning and in the beginning and ending films.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do kind of wish that it was a different Beastie Boys song. Just, I mean, if you're going to keep, oh yeah, we have Sabotage. I forget which one we have in the second
film. Intergalactic.
Intergalactic, okay. And then, yeah, it'd be like, you know, No Swing to Brooklyn or something. I mean,
yeah.
Something that is, or actually no, Fight for Your Right to Party.
Yeah, it has to be something really loud and just goes. There's not a whole lot. I'm trying to think of the catalog of the big hits that people would recognize. There isn't, because we're nerds. We know the band pretty well, but like what a mainstream audience is connect to, and that's one. It's weird that Intergalactic is such a, or not Intergalactic, I'm sorry, Sabotage is such a huge song, because on paper it should never even hit the top 40. It's so unique and strange and loud and in your face.
Yeah, but it's the video for that was what caught everybody's attention, really.
Yeah, so they like you said, they don't erase it by having Spock come in from the alternate world that, what's Eric Bana's character again?
Nero,
right?
Yeah.
And so that's the way they link it up, like, still, like, okay, we're not throwing away your Star Trek, but this is, like, your connective tissue. I kind of like that, and the fact that they, is it all three of them they comment on, or is he gone by part two?
No, he's in two, because he gives, basically sit there like, oh, Khan, yeah, we fought him.
Oh, right, yes, okay.
This is what you need to know. Which, Jesus fucking Christ, yes, the second film was fucking Khan.
I didn't care. You're really, really not happy about it. I'm sure a lot of people aren't happy. I didn't give a shit. My problem with the franchise is that every single villain has the same exact fucking motive. It's all about revenge against Federation.
Yeah.
It's the same thing over and over. And I was like, could you, cause not the original Star Trek movies were all over the place with their villain motivations. And I like that. This one was all like repetitive. The same thing, same thing, same thing.
Yeah. That is definitely the weakness of these as a franchise. To go back to Khan quickly, part of it, it's a twofold problem for me. One, as much as Benedict Cumberbatch is a good actor and he does have gravitas and stuff, he's way too British white to be playing an Indian. It's like, yes, I know there are light-skinned Indian people, and granted, Ricardo Montalban was an Indian as well, but at least...
But we are talking the distant future. Did they say what percentage he was? Was that even a discussion?
It was 1996 when his people left the planet.
Oh,
so
yeah, okay. Never mind.
So
that is,
yes, it's as much as it is a far future storyline. Even when they were coming up with that stuff, it was 30 years in the future that the eugenics war was supposed to happen from the time that Star Trek was originally airing. So
okay, so never mind. That all fails horribly. As if there weren't a million Indian actors they could have chosen from.
Yeah, and even then, as I remember, it was like supposed to be, I think Benicio del Toro was the person that they were trying to get for that. To which I'm like, I mean, sure, you know, at least have someone that you can at least quote unquote buy as as at least.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be the right word to say.
Couldn't they do that same story and not make him Khan? That's the thing that confuses the shit out of me of that one. What I do have a problem with is like, wait, why did you even bother having him set up as this whole different person for so long and then do this? I was like, just keep him as he was.
Well, the whole thing is also his big reveal. I am Khan, and everybody would be like, who? This was your reveal means nothing to us. You are that's a name.
Yeah.
Ooh, we're scared of you, Khan.
But back to the first one. So this one is he's going to different alternate worlds trying to destroy them. I'm terrible at these. I'm terrible. I need to take notes. What was his main motive? Well, just revenge, or was something else? He was
going back in time. What was it? Trying to remember exactly what it was. It's that weird black hole making liquid stuff.
Yeah.
Leonard Nimoy is trying to keep this sun that's gone Nova from destroying everything. It blows up Romulus, which is what pisses off Nero, and he shoots this thing and it stops the supernova, but it creates a gateway that he goes in and Nero both go in. Nero ends up showing up 20-something years before before Nimoy's Spock's supposed to show up. And so in Nero popping up and blowing up the ship that young baby Kirk is being born on, immediately changes everything in this timeline. And you get his entire thing is that he's going to blow up Vulcan.
Okay.
Because, he's going to blow up Vulcan, he's going to blow up Earth because fuck the Federation. And specifically fuck Spock for promising things that he didn't deliver on. He's an interesting villain in that regard because it's like he's just this blue-collar worker who just watched everybody he loved die. And so he and this giant fucking mining ship, it just kind of makes it his mission to just totally ruin everybody's life.
I want to say this, that Eric Bana, whenever he tries to do an American accent, it doesn't work. He looks like he's struggling, like the way that, he's in all those London Has Fallen, Angels Fallen.
Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler, the way they kind of look like they're over-enunciating over their teeth, trying to talk American, and you're like, oh, okay, that's not working at all. But, I mean, the rest of the cast, I think, does a pretty good job. I'm actually shocked that they let Chris Pine do his own version of Kirk instead of repeating his, like, mannerisms. He kind of just took his attitude.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I will give this series is it is a different Federation because of what happens at the inciting incident. And I'm not a big fan of the second film of this, but I totally understand why this Federation is a lot more militaristic.
Yeah.
It's like everything about this is we've been attacked by a completely superior foe. We need to fight back. But granted, this is also the Enterprise does exist in the TV show would have existed in this world. And we did have, if you've ever seen that show, a superior force basically blow the shit out of Earth at one point. And I'm still kind of surprised that we weren't already, the Federation already wasn't as militaristic as they get to by the time Into Darkness happens.
Zachary Quinto and I think Carl Urban, they're good, but at the same time, I still feel like they're doing imitations. Like, they're struggling. They're not making it their own. That they're just kind of copying, and it I don't particularly think it works.
I don't know. I like them both. Carl Urban's a little bit more manic than I would have imagined DeForest Kelly being.
Yeah. By the third movie, though, I think they gel and they kind of fit better, but the first two, I think they struggle.
Yeah, and I think it's Zachary. Well, part of it I think is also that's in the writing, where, my complaint about the first two films basically being oh, we're making Star Trek, we're making Star Wars out of Star Trek, whereas the Star Trek Beyond is a, you know, 2-hour-long episode of Star Trek.
Yeah. Is Zoe Saldana the most successful actor, actress, what do you want to call it, in the world? Is there anybody tied to more successful franchises? and yet could not open a movie
Sam
on her own.
Sam Jackson.
okay, there you go. I was trying to think of somebody else, but she's got this. She has the Guardians of the Galaxy. She has Avatar. There's something else in there, too. I can't remember.
But Saldana is definitely... She definitely goes to the right things, because it's like, if you're looking for someone to be quote unquote, you know, to be quote unquote bankable,
yeah,
you know, it's like she's in a lot of movies that make a lot of money.
And I think her relationship with Spock, I know some people were probably put off by it because it's like, oh, Spock having sex, what the fuck, you know, but it just worked in this one, I think. It surprised me, but it works.
It's subtext in the show. Uhura always seemed to have a thing for Spock.
Really? I haven't seen the show in forever, so I gotta look for that.
Yeah, it's like, especially like in, I think it's in the first episode, she starts serenading him and stuff, and just kind of drifts apart a little bit. But fairly early on, yeah, she really had a little hard on for him.
I said that I wasn't a Trekkie some time ago on Facebook, but then immediately realized I've just listened to Patrick Stewart's book. I am reading both of William Shatner's books, about one about the movies and one about the show, and then I'm also listening to Leonard Nimoy's audiobook just as I'm about to watch these three movies. So like, oh, maybe I'm borderline, but I haven't watched any of the shows in so long, and I haven't seen any of the new stuff at all.
Oh, the new stuff's actually really good, and honestly, if you wanted something that's really good old school style Trek, you know, take a look for Strange New Worlds.
Okay. How do you feel?
Which even includes a young Kirk.
Okay. So does that kind of erase the movies? Or its own timeline? What timeline is it in?
It's in the original timeline.
Okay.
But it's weird because it's a spin-off. It is a prequel to Star Trek, but it's also a spin-off of Discovery, which has so much weird shit in it that it's like, it has technology that literally doesn't exist, and by the time that show ended, or at least Discovery is gone from the time period that it's supposed to be in, they're like, we are never going to talk about this ever again. It's like, whatever it is, it did not happen. It's like, yeah, you have a spaceship that can literally just disappear in one point and appear in another without like the normal time, you know, space travel stuff. It's just one spot and it's there.
How do you feel about Simon Pegg's Scotty?
He is in no way Doohan at all, which I kind of like, because Scotty never had anything to do.
Yeah.
And for a guy who lived a fucking life, his, you know, his character just, you know, Scotty just was kind of there, and there's fun stuff. I mean, watch the Trouble with Tribbles episode, just kind of see how the subtle amount of comedy that you can get from a guy who's, you know, it's like, yes, it's a silly episode, and there's funny stuff that happens, but even then, he's playing it so much subtler than you would think. But you'd never see him shine, and at least Simon Pegg is there to make quips and to be silly because it's Simon Pegg, you know?
Yeah, I actually think his accent in the first movie is pretty atrocious, but it gets better with the sequels.
Oh, definitely.
It's almost SNL level atrocious Scottish accent. If I was Scottish, I might be offended.
Well, I think part of it's also in those first two films, you know, they're directed by J.J. Abrams, written by,
Kurtzman. Kurtzman. Orci? I don't know how you say his name.
Yeah, I think it's Orci, yeah. But, it's, yeah, those two guys. And it's like the third one's by Simon Pegg, and I forget who else.
Yeah.
But it's like you can kind of see, it's like Scotty's there. Yeah, like I said, he's there to do quips and stuff, but he doesn't really have a lot to do.
Yeah, I think part of it, definitely with the third movie, since Simon Pegg was writing it, that he gave Scotty a lot more to do. But he does seem to be like, oh, he's very useful in these movies compared to usual.
Yeah, he's like, he's supposed to utility player of this entire cast. And it's like, I genuinely actually feel bad for Anton Yelchin, who doesn't get as much to do in them that he really should have.
The John Cho's Sulu is giving so much more and advances as a character so much faster than what they gave George Takei.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, in the series, Takei had a lot more to do when they actually let him play. But, yeah, when you get to the films, he's just kind of there.
Yeah, it isn't until, what, like, the sixth one or something they talk about him moving up?
He's actually captaining a ship in the sixth one.
Okay. Yeah, so this one, they're kind of already dropping those seeds pretty early on. My favorite scene in this is when it's the very first movie, when they're about to go up to the top of the ship for a fight or something like that, and he goes, so I heard you have training. He's like, fencing. And you're like, that's not what you expect, and I'm glad it's circumvented. Like, oh, yes, I'm a kung fu master.
Yeah, and that's also from the series, because that's... I could just immediately think of Unmock Time. Should I? Yes, I'm a fucking Star Trek nerd.
Okay, apparently I've forgotten all of this. I'm sorry. I feel like a shithead right now because...
And actually, it's not even Unmock Time. It's, the Naked Time.
Naked Space, or what is it called?
Yeah, Unmock Time's they have to go back to Vulcan because Spock is horny.
I remember that one.
Where the crew basically gets that, substance on them that makes them become completely uninhibited.
Right.
And there's a thing where Takai's got his shirt off, he's got his fencing sword, and he's like running, you know, swashbuckling through the walls.
Oh, yeah, of course I remember that now, yes. So I remember when I was a kid, I think we talked about this during the other Star Trek episodes. I apologize if this is repeating myself. But we always had the main networks, but we had this one channel that was really high up. And they were low budget, so they only had, like, syndicated stuff and reruns for the longest time. Eventually, they became Fox. But I remember Star Trek every single day, and twice on Saturdays, twice on Sundays. And that's how I watched most of the show. And then I don't think I had seen it. I think about 10 years ago, I borrowed the first disc from the library. So I only saw, like, the first, five, six episodes. And I never got back to it. Some of them I really do remember. That is one I vaguely remember, but I really do need to revisit. It's not a long show. I mean, for Pete's sake, it's, 70 episodes?
Yeah, like and even then, a lot of those episodes you can skip. I did a rewatch not too long. Well, considering with the show in general, not that long ago. But
okay, well, maybe you can make maybe you can make a list to me, or I can show you the episode. You go, nope, yep, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. I've been going through a lot of them. Just like, there's a lot of episodes where they go back in time and fight Nazis or gangsters. it's a lot more disproportionate. It could go, a lot of backlot shoots. Yeah. A lot of backlot shoots.
Well, okay. I like the fact that they are giving Captain Pike more to do in the movies, and I guess now the show, right? He's the main character in Discovery.
Yeah.
Strange
New Worlds. Strange New Worlds.
That was always a fluke. Like, Jeffrey Hunter was always intended to be the captain, and then when they finally saw the first episode and that he was miserable, something like that, something just didn't work. So he was let go, but they always had that episode filmed. And if I remember correctly, season 2 or 3, when they didn't have enough money to finish the season out, they went in and re-edited that or something?
Yeah, I think it's 2. It's in season 2. The episode, it's Menagerie.
Okay.
Parts 1 and 2, yeah.
Yeah, so in this one, Captain Pike is basically a father figure to him because he's lost his father. And I fucking love Bruce Greenwood. He's not a household name, but he's always a guy whenever you show up. He's got that... really cool authoritarian kind of feel to him without being like, like the way the military guys, some actors are. He's
the principal that I wouldn't mind having in in a film where it's like, oh, you know, here, this is the rough school that, someone needs to come in and whip into shape. And he comes in, but he's tough, but he's not a complete and total dictator or something. Yeah.
And I tell you what, if he wasn't a Canadian actor where that was a big thing for him, is that he stays in Canada, I bet you he probably would have been a bigger actor somewhere along the way. Maybe in like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, he would definitely be... I don't think he'd necessarily be like a the leading man, although I do think he has the look for that.
Yeah, but maybe genre films. You know, like he would be like... Dimension Films presents this franchise that's kind of lower budget. He would be like that, like a Kevin Bacon kind of thing.
Well, it's like I could see him being... he's one of those... I could see him being a very prominent that guy actor where it's just he shows up and it's you immediately see him and it's like shit, he died not too long ago. He was the Chancellor in Star Trek VI. He was
David Warner.
What's up,
David Warner?
Like David Warner or something. Okay. Where it's just you would always see him in everything.
You're thinking Christopher Plummer. Sorry.
No. I'm not thinking Christopher Plummer. I'm thinking David Warner.
Okay.
Because he's also in 5. It's like, it's someone like constantly showing up and stuff, and you are always like, oh yeah. You know, it's like, and you never feel that he's putting in, you know, that he's phoning it in or anything.
So the second movie, we talked a lot about already, but I just want to say, like, I look at the budgets on these, and I guess compared to a lot of franchises, they're not that big, but sometimes you really don't see it on the screen unless you really pay attention, because you remember everything in the old films was models, and if they're going to show something, they never showed the city. They showed the city, I think, in all three of them. You know, the Earth planet is always basically ship-based or barren planet-based, you know, closed set kind of stuff. They really do bring in a lot of stuff in the backgrounds and stuff that you don't remember ever seeing in the show. And I think that's where most of the money is. It's not going into the cast. And the action sequences basically are the same in all three of them.
Pretty much, yeah. It's just lots of spaceships going shooty-shoot, pew-pew-pew. In two of the films, we do get the Enterprise destroyed.
That's happening too often, kids. Way too often. These things, they act like they're like, easy to replace.
Yeah. And let's see. Like with this one, I like the fact that we do get Peter Weller.
Yes. I love genre films that'll bring back guys that are reliable, that have kind of like been forgotten. For whatever reason, not enough hits or something like that, or they just aged out of those roles. And that's what I like. But Peter Weller, as calm and sedate as he is in his most famous roles, Buckaroo Banzai and RoboCop, that dude has a voice when he's pissed.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, in watching this film, you could take out all of the con stuff, and you still have a hell of a villain right there.
Right.
But it's like, okay... One more time bitching about Khan. When the fuck did Khan have super blood that could heal people? That's literally not something he has.
Yeah, that bothers me a lot about the franchise. This one is the biggest violator of, hey, let's do this pop culture reference from the franchise to make everybody comfortable. That bothers me a lot about remakes and reboots, is this constant need, like almost like a baby. Like, oh, here's this little thing you remember, you like this? This will keep you interested in the franchise. Fucking hate that.
Well, okay, and I will do this for Star Trek and Star Wars, because J.J. Abrams both did both of these. Episode 7, I have no problem with them basically doing a soft reboot, soft remake of the first original Star Wars. It's divorced enough in time from the film, even though we did have media in between that, but divorced enough from the original version of the film that you could sit there and kind of soft introduce things, give us the reminders of all the things that we love while giving us new toys to play with.
Yeah.
That's fine. It was different enough. But it's also why when you get to start, you know, episode 8, you know, the entire fact of, okay, by the way, all that shit we did in episode 7 doesn't matter anymore because we're throwing all that nostalgia shit off the table.
Do you think that if all three of them had been like that, nostalgia based or whatever you want to call whatever JJ was doing, that people would be so angry. Most people got butthurt because of part 8. It just feels like the fact that they went so far in a different direction with 8 and then said, oh shit, and went all the way back with 9.
This is something that I have a friend that I really want to have this discussion on Wax 4 about, but it's like the idea of the character assassination of Luke Skywalker. It's like, no, he became Yoda. Yoda also was a very annoying person who was basically doing what he could to get this punk kid away from him.
Yeah.
And Luke Skywalker is doing the exact same thing. All that gross shit, the drinking the green milk, being very gross about it, is there to basically just kind of go, I'm doing this to get you the fuck away from me. And so that's now, to take this back to what we're actually talking about.
Yeah, sorry.
them redoing Khan, except you can't do Wrath of Khan if you hadn't already introduced Khan. And so we have this shitty bait and switch that was immediately ruined by the fact that no one could keep anything really that secret in Hollywood anyway. So we all knew he was playing Khan.
Yeah.
And so this whole, he's such and such a character's name and doing all these things. And like I said, then he has that reveal of who he is. And it's like, no one knows who you are, dude. You menacingly telling us your name is not the audience gets it, but the audience also is pissed off because you're not Ricardo Montalban.
Well, it'd been funny because there's always a threat, there's a bigger threat of humor, I think, especially since Chris Pine is a wise ass in this run of movies, is if he had just been like, and you are who? I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. I bet you if it had been in the third movie and Simon Pegg had written that, he would have acknowledged, like, what? Does that mean something to anybody?
Yeah. And that's the thing, is it's... He's not a slouch, but it's the fact that it is lazily doing things like, oh, okay, we're going to swap it out. Instead of Spock sacrificing himself, it's going to be Kirk. But they're going to do the same thing where he's on, one side of the glass,
yeah,
the other side. And then we're going to get the, Khan!
I got to say, okay, the more we talk about this, the more annoying it is. Because I was like, oh, you're not breaking any new ground here. You should have gone a different direction completely.
Yeah, he could have been, it's like, the thing is, and granted, this is years before, but they've, they laid the groundwork in Discovery to do this film that they're eventually going to put out, which is Section 31, which is the Black Ops version of Starfleet.
Yeah.
And they were a big deal in Deep Space Nine. They're in this, they're in Into Darkness, because that's the whole group that's doing all these shady, shady shit and making that ship and all that. But I don't think they actually ever mention them by name, and it's like, yeah, this is your villain, is the dark side of Starfleet, not nostalgia shit. why are you trying to nostalgia bait everybody when you don't have the story to nostalgia bait us?
Yeah. I do say, though, even though it was repetitive and it just seemed kind of pointless, Chris Pine and his performance, his Captain Kirk is so much more human than William Shatner's. I know, you're going to lose your shit, I'm sorry. His was all like, his seemed more James Bond, kind of cold and calculating and cool, Whereas Chris Pine is a wise ass, but there's reasons why he's a wise ass and difficult to deal with. But he's
having more fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it seems like. His Kirk is having adventures. His Kirk is the crew of Firefly.
Yeah, he's enthusiastic. But he does something with Kirk that Shatner never would, is be scared. He was scared to die. And yeah.
And that's also you never really had that in the show. And in the films, yeah, it was kind of... You never gave Kirk... The only time really Shatner ever was given a really good, you know, thing to perform was in Wrath of Khan, really.
Yeah, when he loses his son in the third one, though, that was pretty good, though.
Yeah, and there's other stuff about Six, you know. I mean, there's, it's not that he's, that Shatter's a bad performer or anything, but the best acting in, I think, truly in Shatter's entire career is those end, those ending lines in Two, where it's like you're seeing this guy, you know, breaking up over the death of his friend.
Yeah,
it's, and it's like, and it's something that you can do, right, by, well, having.
It's a different era too, because action heroes were treated differently back then than they are over the, like, the last 20, 25 years.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is we're allowed to have more vulnerable characters now.
All right, Star Trek Beyond. You know, I remember when everybody saw the trailer for it, they're like, oh, they're Fast and Furious-ing the franchise or whatever. I'm not going to see this. I think that hurt the box office a little bit, but also I think 2 put a sour taste in everybody's mouth. That's another reason why the franchise petered out, because it just as expensive, but man, it made about $115 million less than the second movie. So,
Yeah, and that's the thing, though. It's like, yeah, they're talking about, literally, the thing that everybody bitched about is, what, it is a action sequence in the film, but it's not like they build everything around the idea that, oh, Kirk is going to ride a motorcycle.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, they sold it in a different way, and people were turned off. But if you watch the movie, it's such a small chunk.
Yeah, and but that's also the thing is, okay, you know, specifically, let's talk about Fast and Furious-ing it. It's like, guys, Justin Lin directed Fast 5, which is arguably the best film of that franchise. So, if you are going to bitch about something, Justin Lin made a good film. He made a couple of good films. Shit, he did Better Luck Tomorrow. Come on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He did more than just Fast and Furious. The problem is that he's so synonymous with the franchise, but you can see even him, he was like, oh, fuck this, and he walked away from the 10th one. And there's a reason, if you've seen Fast X and you think this franchise is insane and ridiculous, oh, Fast X just, it's too much. I can't do it. It's terrible. I know there's one more to go and I'll finish the franchise, but
I couldn't even watch 8. I had to stop at 7.
The minute Paul Walker was out of the franchise, that's when it should have stopped. It's been petering out ever since.
But of these three films, this is the one that does make me feel more like this is the sort of trick that we have gotten after Nemesis.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's also interesting is people bitched about, oh, you got Idris Elba in this, and you wrap him up in all that makeup. And is he not allowed to do this kind of thing? I'm sorry, but that's part of the plot, is that he's mutated and he wants revenge.
What's very funny about this is, like I mentioned, is Enterprise had happened in this world, because Idris Elba and his crew are Mako officers, and I mean, they're 100% the soldiers of the Federation. There's an entire reason why he's very much there's no such thing as peace. We have to constantly think, because these are the people who fought the Zindi. These who are the ones that blew the shit out of Earth.
Yeah.
You know, they mentioned a plot line that didn't happen in the show but was supposed to, which was the Romulan Wars. It's like, specifically, this is a guy who, you know, when we're talking about, like, the dark version of the Federation, yeah, 100%. This is a guy who exists in this more militaristic mindset. I just kind of feel bad that he's, you know, his choice in performance is that very stilted, hard to understand, you need to have subtitles to understand half of the shit he says. I did not see this in theaters, and I would have been probably a little pissed off. It would have felt like I saw, like, Bane.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's the closest thing I could think of. Well, I think the smartest thing that they did in this movie is tear the team apart immediately. Like, the threat is real, they don't stand a chance, they tear the team apart, they put them on this planet, and so it becomes almost like a survival plane crash movie. You know, you're out in the woods, you're away from the rest of your team, you're out of supplies, you're at serious risk. It's more like a man against the elements kind of film than a normal Star Trek movie.
Yeah, and that's kind of what's nice is you have these two films that were huge, sweeping, you know, space operatic epics. And like I said, right, like this feels like Trek is, these are people in Star Trek caves. These, you know, these people are in forests and on sets. It is small. It is not as, you know, oh my God, we're sweeping through the galaxy. It's no, we're trapped in a handful of locations and we're, you know, fighting against, you know, simpler MacGuffins.
Yeah. Well, and that, and you get to dive into the characters more because we have a fun time of like pairing people up with not normally would be together, you know, and then kind of watching them bounce off of each other in this world. I actually really like the third one. I feel it's very underrated.
And I would almost say that I think this is my favorite of the films. Although it's also hard for me to say it because I think the first one does a really good job of balancing a lot of those elements. But okay. Do you actually remember the controversy of Sulu being shown to be gay in this film?
I don't even remember that. But no.
Yeah, it is because, you know, obviously people, you know, on a certain side of the political spectrum,
of course,
you know, when saying about the fact that he was gay,
like they don't even understand what Star Trek is. I see this all the time. They don't even understand the whole point of Star Trek.
I feel a little disappointed in, but I also 100% understand the reason for it. George Takei wasn't totally cool with it. Partially because it, you know, having been that, you know, he had to be in the closet during that time, he played Sulu as straight. And so I don't remember the exact wording, obviously, this is years divorced from that, but it's like he felt like that's kind of pandering a little bit. It's not how I played it. And I was kind of going, true, but you also, we never see it one way or the other.
Yeah, it's also, so, it's a different universe.
Yeah, and I think it's his, it's literally, what, 30 seconds of the film, if that?
Yeah.
Of two guys holding hands as they walk away.
Here's the thing. People, and of course, it peaked, I think, with the whole South Park Pandaverse episode a couple months ago, is, look, there's going to be a pendulum swinging in pop culture. We're making up for all the ignoring of anything that wasn't white, male, and straight for a century. It'll level out eventually, and it won't seem that weird, and you know, it'll just be normal everyday. You know, it won't feel like pandering. It won't feel like you're correcting course. It'll just be normal now, and people won't feel like, oh, this is woke.
Yeah, it's like 100%. I've never, you know, wouldn't have cared one way or the other, and I thought it was actually kind of a nice, in a way, nice tribute to Takei himself.
Yeah.
Who, it's like,
the heart was in the right place.
Yeah, and ultimately, one way or the other, it is such an inconsequential thing in the film that if you're going to lose your shit over it, like you said, you don't get Star Trek at all.
The what's the order of the films now that we've discussed all of them? If you know, I should have asked you beforehand.
That's a good question. Well, let's see. 2 and 6 would still be my tops. Then probably, shit, you're gonna make me choose now, aren't you? I guess the reboot Star Trek, then Beyond, then 4, 3, 1. Oh shit, I forgot the Next Gen films.
Yeah. I was like, how do you look about First Contact?
Yeah, First Contact would be maybe 2, First Contact, 6.
Hold on. Okay, here's the list. You want me to go first?
Go for it.
Okay, hopefully I got all these right. I have a horrible scribbling here. 8 is my favorite. That's First Contact, right? Am I doing these right?
That's First Contact. All right.
Search for Spock, Wrath of Khan, Beyond, the reboot, 2009, Insurrection. No, you know what? Hold on. Undiscovered Country, then Insurrection. The Voyage Home, Into Darkness, Nemesis, Generations, Final Frontier and the original. I'm sorry, the original is really boring. It's really, really boring. Yeah, I'd rather have actually, terrible than boring.
I'd forgotten to put Into Darkness in mine, too. So, yeah, so Wrath of Khan, First Contact, Undiscovered Country, Star Trek Reboot, Star Trek Beyond, Voyage Home, Search for Spock, Generations, the original, Into Darkness, then Insurrection, Nemesis, and Final Frontier.
All right, everybody, that is it for the Star Trek discussion. Maybe one day down the road we'll watch one of the shows. I doubt it. It's too much to discuss. But thank you for listening to this, and after this we'll go off and do our MonsterVerse, the Legacy. Is it Legacy? Is that the name of the company?
Legacy is the name of the company.
The whole MonsterVerse Godzilla movies as we gear up for, I think it's supposed to be the last Godzilla Kong movie. I really, the Kong movies are weird because you really can't go anywhere near the original or Kong's dead and it's over.
True.
So, all right, that is everybody. John, you want to send us out?
Everyone, live long, prosper, and have a good one.
Nice.